All right, folks. I think we're going to go ahead and get started here this afternoon. Thank you for showing up for our session link meetings where you want them to be. Looking across the room, Looking across the room, it's going to be a little difficult for those of us who are vertically challenged to see everyone in the corner, so I apologize in advance if you're sitting on the wings that I may not be able to address you as we move around. But wanted to introduce a couple of concepts and build on some things that Gurdeep talked about in his keynote this morning. He talked about moving from a world of unified communications to universal communications. We're going to dive into some concepts at the intersection of the physical and the digital environment based on some work and partnership that we've been doing in a couple of places over the last 18 months. So I'm Blaine Carpenter. I run the design and visioning team for Skype in Redmond, and I'm joined by my partner, Ryan.
Hi there. My name is Ryan Anderson. I'm with Herman Miller. If you don't know Herman Miller, we are one of the world's largest office furniture companies. You might know some of our products like the Aeron chair. And I'm the director of future technology, which basically means it's my job to help try to envision how the future work environment should be informed by and better accommodate emerging technologies.
And I'm Doug Anderson, a program manager in the Skype and Link partner engineering team, and I'm responsible for our partnerships with device makers and our certification program for the Optimized for Link devices as well as Skype certified peripherals.
And there's no relation between us.
And
that we
no
know so far.
Yes.
Not yet. none found. So to kick things off, I thought I'd introduce you to a video that'll summarize some of the concepts that we're going to be talking about over the next 60 minutes. So why don't we take a look at this as we roll.
Back in the day, we worked the same hours, sitting together in one building. Clock in, clock out. You joined a meeting by walking to it. But the way people work together has changed, fast. And suddenly, with Link, we're here. And despite all of our amazing progress, a lot of meeting rooms are stuck in the 1950s. Remote teams are an afterthought, and efficient collaboration suffers. Why should room layouts and communication tools dictate how we work? It's time for technology and space to get in sync. Today, Microsoft Link Room System offers a more intelligent, nimble way. It's always on and ready, so remote teams can instantly join the room without waiting around, and everyone works together in an interactive and immersive environment. We envision a future where we'll go even further, considering every aspect of the meeting experience, room layout, lighting, furniture, and hardware, with intuitive software to tie it all together. People will be able to freely move about the room and easily collaborate, knowing the remote team can hear every word and see every sketch and gesture. And what if we could stage our appearance despite a noisy and an unflattering background, so we always sound and look our best? We also imagine smart spaces for quick group huddles, where spontaneous collaborations become easy, whether down the hall or across time zones. We see an exciting future where working with remote teams is completely natural. Meetings are about ideas. We shouldn't even notice the tools in space. It's the people that matter.
Great, so hopefully there's some familiar concepts in that video or maybe that illustrated some things that have been problematic for you in your own work with deploying Link, with furnishing spaces, with thinking about the intersection of how people are trying to get their work done and the devices they're using. We fundamentally believe that the way that people interact with information in our workplace is changing. So about 18 to 24 months ago, we were working on the latest release of Link, and we started to discover a trend in the user experience, and that was that much of what was making a good or a bad Link user experience was happening outside of the four corners of the screen. Whether that was room layout, lighting, furniture, people's posture sitting at the camera, if you have a surface, sometimes you end up with the up-the-nose cam. And these were things that really weren't part of the traditional software realm. So we started asking ourselves if we're going to deliver a unified communications product and really make people-to-people interaction a part of everyday work, what sort of things do we not know? And about that time, we ran into Herman Miller, who was asking some very similar questions on the opposite side, had some blind spots in areas that we had expertise, and we had some expertise in areas that they had blind spots.
Close.
Same thing twice.
Right.
So, Ryan, I don't know if you wanted to talk about
sure.
the beginning of that.
Yeah, I mean, we've known for a while that when we look at the user experience and we look at how the adoption of unified communications and other technology products happen, the space plays a very relevant role. If the space gets in the way of adoption, it hurts everybody. Likewise, we know that from a physical space standpoint, that the technologies that are being used are so drastically changing our behaviors and our expectations of the workplace that we believe that it was possible to create a much more integrated user experience, and we set about the task of really looking at that together. Our goal was really to try to root this in changes in work. I mean, that's what it comes down to, and that's one of the key themes you'll hear throughout the day from us, which is when we start talking about deploying technology solutions, when we start thinking about creating spaces, it should basically be rooted in a really solid understanding of the work that's done. That's how we all add value together. So the easiest way for me to probably convey some of the context of what we did is to walk through three simple slides looking at the way that work has changed. This is kind of an oversimplification, but it's the way that Herman Miller, in large part fed by some of our collaboration with Microsoft, has begun thinking about the ways people work. If we go back to early 1900s, this is all about mass production, right? The era of industry was about organizing people hierarchically. The tools were local, things like typewriters, notepads, things of that nature. This was not about a networked kind of thing. And the places where people work were very simple, and they were kind of emergent there before and after World War II as kind of the very beginning of what white-collar office places might be. Things started to change drastically in the 60s and 70s. It's when the information era and really the emergence of IT, as well as the emergence of things like cubicles, came around. And in fact, Herman Miller was the company that created what are actually known as systems products, but they became cubicles. And the goal was really to begin to organize all of these networks of people in new ways. The tools that were being deployed were all about, you know, inputting information, connecting information, and the people were critically dependent upon those tools, which is how we got things like cube farms, because they were basically ways of organizing the hardware and the people inputting into those hardware in an efficient way. But things are changing, and I want to convey that we're really right in the throes, and it's a really cool opportunity of a new era that we call the era of ideas. This isn't new to you, but if we take a look at the way work's being done, it's much more collaborative, much more dynamic, much more decentralized, and the kinds of tools that all of us are using, in particular mobile tools, have drastically changed what we're observing and the ways that people work every day. At the very least, we know that the old assumptions around you do all of your individual work in a cube or in a private office, and you do all of your group work in a conference room, just aren't the case. If you take a look even in the context of the space we're in today, all of the work being done through the tools we have, it really requires a new look about how we collectively partner to support this new era of ideas.
So I wanted to share with you a couple of the observations that we made collectively as we dove into looking at this new era of work. These really became foundational in the way that we started thinking about how we might tackle this problem. So, unfamiliar to anyone in the room, I doubt it, meetings today include multiple layers of technology, of people. Often joining a meeting today means building the meeting when you get there. So devices that don't necessarily talk to one another, people that don't necessarily have the same level of technical expertise, a lot of layers to deal with as we get together. New digital tools, particularly natural user interface digital tools, things like PPI, really force new considerations of the space. What do I do with a touch screen at the front of the room? Well, all of a sudden, the affordance for getting up and using that device is not there if the conference room's table is pushed all the way to the front of the room. What kinds of things support people getting together, collaborating, getting up, and using the space to its fullest, using the technology to its fullest? There's been a trend in the last several years of bring your own device, another thing that I'm sure that's familiar to everyone in the room. What may be a little less familiar is the notion that people want to bring those same experiences that they're having with those devices to work. So a lot of the social behaviors we see around snackable bits of information, quick sharing, bring things in, bring things out, trying different tools and reconfiguring them in new ways to get things done are influencing the expectations that people have once they get to work. Spatial constraints often dictate our tool set. And this is if I could put an underscore on maybe one slide in this whole section on observations, this is really true. If the space doesn't have an affordance, people will either seek to find that affordance so they can communicate the way they want to, or they'll actually go to a lesser mode of communication, which impacts productivity. Digital tools are significantly changing the ROI of physical spaces. Space like this used to be the only opportunity for a one-to-many communication. Now we have Link. Space like this is very costly to set up and maintain. It sits empty most of the time, and then when it gets used to its fullest. So the value of these spaces is beginning to shift. People are starting to look for multi-use spaces, configurable spaces, and places that they can bring in some of these experiences that they have from the outside world. They're going to seek spaces that support the natural use of technology and the most human connection that they can make with people on the other end. If they're using video, they want to look good. They want to sound great. They want to be able to hear. They want to be able to focus. And if they can find a space that does that for them, they'll gravitate towards it. In spite of the fact that technology is letting people work from anywhere, culturally, socially, from a productivity standpoint, the office remains central. It's a hub. The workplace is all about building community, building connection, and we'll look at some challenges with the importance of that a little bit later on. We can't afford to step away from it and just say, work is distributed, so we can't solve the problem in the workplace. We actually need to intensify the focus in that area.
So given this body of insights, as well as a lot of other research that Herm Miller's been doing in recent years, we've created a concept for the future office, a vision, basically, of the future workplace that we call Living Office. I don't have time to fully dive on the concept now, but what I want to do is introduce it as a framework, not to sell you on any particular idea, but instead to begin to help us have a new dialogue about what does it really mean to support people doing the work they're doing in spaces that promote a really natural human dynamic and a natural use of technology. We've got a whole variety of learnings that kind of went into this concept, and one of them is really simple, which is today, workers are shoppers, meaning we shouldn't make any assumptions about anybody having to go to the office or having to go to a specific space to do a certain type of work. People, just like they have the increasing ability to choose their own device, now have the ability to choose where they want to work. And we've found over the years that as more and more autonomy is granted, either technologically or spatially or otherwise, to people, they begin working in new places and new ways, and this is a means of unpacking what exactly that really means. Our goal, just as I mentioned, transitioning from that era of information to an era of ideas, is to ditch this, the traditional cube farm, and really move into something that is much more dynamic, much more interesting, and much more based on user choice. This happens to be a space within Herm Miller. We call it our front door at our R&D center called Design Yard, and it's just one example of the kinds of spaces that we see emerging. So the idea here is we need to understand and have a different vernacular about how people work. And one of the things we've done is we've used ethnographic research, in other words, watching people work, to create a new framework to have that conversation about what are people really doing. We categorized it as 10 modes of work. And the value here isn't necessarily that all of you walk away with some memorization of what these words are, but rather that we see our value, our collective value, whether you work in IT, whether you happen to be working with your facilities and real estate team, or whether you happen to be working with your own team of end users, by beginning the conversation with, okay, what are we actually doing? What kind of work has to get done? And some things, when we use terms like collaborate, are simply too vague. So is collaboration, in this case, individuals working on a Word document and SkyDrive individually, what we would call divide and conquer, and they're bringing that all together digitally over separate periods of time, in which case they really need a place to support that type of work, Or no, is this like five people whiteboarding post-it notes with somebody on video, which we would call co-create? It's a very different sort of experience. Let me give you just a couple of examples. If we take a typical meeting room, a lot of conference rooms have kind of become like everything to everybody, just designed assuming that no matter what you want to do in a group, you might be able to do it, and these spaces tend to not be good at any particular thing. But the thing that probably is most important for a meeting space is to support conversation. We know that spatially, there are ways of supporting conversation in a really natural way. There's other types of spaces, if you've ever been in like a super formal boardroom, where it may not be as natural. When you layer in the remote experience, then it causes us to ask a new question about what does it really mean to support a more natural conversation among people that, yes, may be on link, but also may be in the room while someone else is on link. That would be one example of trying to dissect the work mode, in this case, Converse, down to a more granular level. Another example, if you've ever been waiting for a meeting or just outside of a meeting and you've noticed a group of people kind of huddling around right before the meeting or probably right after the meeting, the more we observe this behavior, the more we realize this was kind of a legitimate, interesting, and in some cases very impactful work mode. Meaning, when you watch a meeting break up, if you look at the behaviors that happen right afterwards, maybe somebody who's more introverted decides to speak up because they didn't feel comfortable in a larger setting. Or maybe decisions are being made or tasks are being assigned. This is critical behaviors to support, yet we've never really thought of that as any specific behavior that needed to be supportive. So the taxonomy or the framework of work modes simply gives us a chance to ask the question, when we're supporting people and they're working, what exactly are we trying to support them doing? That's the first question, and it's one that we should ask together. The second question might be, well, where are they doing it? And just like I said, one size fits all spaces, you'll begin to see kind of going by the wayside, and you'll see a greater range of spaces within a given environment from which people can work. We've kind of constructed these 10 different settings, work settings, as a way for us to get our heads around it. Again, based on research, we probably could have made it 9 or 11, but the point is, we were able to take these 10, and it gave us a framework for beginning to ask questions like, well, what should the space be and what should the tools be to support the kind of work being done? And those are the kinds of conversations that I think transform a conversation from an IT standpoint, from someone maybe perceiving IT as helping to fix computers to actually adding strategic value. Likewise, it does the same thing for facilities. It's not just the people that build the buildings, it's people that build spaces that people can choose from to really get work done. Let me give you a couple of examples. We call these hives. These are open workstations. You probably see a lot of environments like this where you've got open tables with lots of people working there. In the industry, it's known as benching. Very interesting development. What we tend to see is if that's the new space where everybody's supposed to do all their work, then it's a fail. It's a fantastic solution for people that want to interact with people around them and be in a very energetic and dynamic environment. But when you need to go make a link call that's private, you need to be able to do some contemplative thinking, when you need to be able to do some focus, we would suggest what we would call a haven. It could be a private office, it could be a shared individual space, and we see the two as coexisting, right? So the assumption isn't that you do all your work in one of these places. The assumption is you do a variety of things throughout the day, much like in your home, and you have a variety of different spaces in your home to go to different things. This is the perfect place within an office landscape to begin to go do more focused individual work. Likewise, we know that meeting spaces are evolving. We think they're important for things like conversation, like I said before, for presentation, which we call show and tell. But then we've actually decided to call this other setting a landing. This is a space specifically designed outside of a meeting space to support the warm-up and cool-down that we talked about earlier. So you get the idea here. Again, it's not necessarily the science of placemaking, but it's this idea of asking better questions about what work people are doing, viewing people as having the ability to shop from these spaces in a variety of ways, and then really asking what spaces belong in that overall landscape to get this kind of work done to help this organization get to the next level. And with that, we should probably transition to the other question, which is, after you think about the work and after you think about the space, now it's critical we get to the tools.
Thanks, Ryan. And really, to tie this all together, if we look back at the very first slide, we saw that there's the digital space and the physical space. And in between the two are devices. Devices are the place where people engage with their communication, whether that's a local participant on a, you know, in a room who's clustered around a speakerphone, or whether you're talking to somebody remotely. We want to make sure that as you're planning your link deployments, you're thinking holistically about how you can optimize the use of the spaces that you've got and the devices that you're going to put into those spaces. And I want to bring this back to a question that I often get answered, since I'm the person who's in charge of our device qualification program. People always ask me, what's the best device for Link? And they're looking like I can give them a single device that this device right here, this will answer all of your needs. The reality is, you got to understand what the person's needs are. Let's roll that back one step further and say, what's the point of communication? Communication is about connecting with people. It's not about the technology. Technology is great, otherwise we wouldn't all be here, but it's about connecting with people. And when we select devices, we want to encourage that connection with people by selecting the right device for the right person's use case and the right spaces. And to help make this selection of devices easier, several years ago we launched what we call the Optimize for Link qualification program. And we've said, you know what? There's enough choices that people have to make when they're deploying Link that they shouldn't have to worry about the quality of the device. They're going to spend a lot of money buying a bunch of devices. They shouldn't have to get those deployed and then have problems with that deployment. So we said, great, we're going to make sure that devices that are optimized for Link have great audio-video quality. That means things like being loud enough to use in the environment you're going to deploy it in if it's a speakerphone, having great echo cancellation, having low distortion. If it's a camera, it should have clear image quality, and it should be able to capture enough of the image to be able to see what you need to see. We test these devices through a variety of features to ensure that audio and video quality is top-notch, and we also make sure that it interoperates with Link. So, for example, if you're using a headset, you press the button to answer the call, it answers. If you want to mute the call, there's no question about whether you're muted. The Link UI registers that mute, and you get that visual feedback to know confidently that I am muted. I'm not going to have a career-limiting discussion be broadcast over my headset. And beyond that, we said, listen, we're Microsoft. Do we want to make the devices? We want to make the platform. We want to work with a variety of device makers who can help us innovate and create devices at a rapid pace and reach all of the different needs. So that's why we built a qualification program that works with a diverse set of top-notch device makers. And this is kind of our list of a bunch of device makers that we work with. You'll see a lot of recognized names. These are generally the best names in the business. And these device makers help us to fill out the Link portfolio of devices. We have IP phones for people that are looking for an always-on device, whether it's in a personal office or in a private workspace. We have USB endpoints for a diverse set of use cases, whether it's for a headset or a webcam or a tethered wireless headset. We have Link Room System, which is a recently launched product that helps you have a confident meeting experience without all the hassles of connection. And we also test PCs for audio and video performance. I'm sure we've all been on a call at some point in time where somebody's using a PC and you can barely hear them, or their camera is really poor quality. We test PCs to make sure that the quality of experience on that, the audio and video performance, is going to be enough to meet your expectations as a Link user. And why do we do this? Do we do this just to give you a bunch of devices? Are we up here? Why are we up here? Well, the main reason we're up here is I think we want to say collectively, you guys, when you're doing a build out of Link, you want to think about a certain framework, think about the devices and the spaces so that you can best encourage your Link users to have the most productive and collaborative experience. And you can do that in some of the spaces that you've already got and in the spaces that you're going to build out. We're not telling you to tear down your existing spaces. I'm sure Ryan's company might appreciate the revenue if you replaced all of your current spaces.
That would be fine.
But you don't have to wait until you build out a new space to start thinking about the device-human-space interaction. Start thinking about these new interaction modes today with the spaces you've got, and also plan out for the new spaces so they can enable the new types of work style that you want to have. From the Link side, from the software side, we know that people are not working in one place. Work is no longer a location. Work is something we do. Work is the people that we collaborate with. And we are designing our software and our devices to go with you fluidly. Where you need to work, that's where the software is. That's where the solution is going to be, whether it's at your desk, whether it's at one of these other spaces we have, whether it's on the road at the Starbucks coffee stand upstairs. We want to be able to enable you to work and collaborate in any of those locations. And we want you to have the ability for it to just work. You shouldn't have to wonder whether, if I plug in my device, is it good? No, it should just work. No need to configure, download drivers, blah, blah, blah. It should just work. And that's part of the promise of the Optimize for Link devices. Now I'm going to segue to a combination of devices and spaces so we can kind of talk through how this framework can help you directly think through your device and space decisions.
And so if we're going to say that we want to put people at the center of our decision making around how we deploy these kinds of tools, it's helpful to ask from a user perspective some what-if questions. These are a little bit forward-looking, but they also kind of help us reframe in terms of what is it I'm trying to get done at work? What is it that I want to do and can't? What is it that I can do but want to do differently? So in this first section, kind of ask yourself the question, what if I could always find a sanctuary for my daily communications? What if there was a perfect space available for me no matter what kind of communication I needed to do? What if I could take that call from the noisy open floor plan or in my kitchen, the kids screaming in the background or noise happening from the outside? What if I could present from those kinds of spaces with comfort and ease, knowing my voice sounded great, my appearance was good because my lighting was good, that I could be confident and in control of the presentation no matter where I was?
And because we've said we don't want to ask you to wait until you build out a new space to start taking advantage of these new opportunities to collaborate and work better, we want to tell you what you can do now with devices that are available today that can work with these spaces. And we want to start helping you think through those decision factors. If you're about to buy some devices, which device choices would you want to consider? What are the trade-offs? You want to think through, what are you trying to encourage people to do? What do you want to enable them to do? So if you're in this open workspace environment, this open workspace combined with the private workspace of the Haven, you're going to find users that want to be able to find a communication device that's always on. When they walk into that private room to make that call, they don't want to have to wait. You know, they've undocked their laptop, and they don't want to have to wait for it to boot up. They want it to be just always on and always there. And IP phones are a great option for that because they're always connected, and you can dial someone at the touch of the button. In the workspace itself, we have a decision that we want to make. What kind of work are we doing? For the headsets, for example, if you have a choice between a monaural and binaural headset, one is not always better than the other. They're better for different types of work. One thing that we experienced in the Skype division, Link and Skype division at Microsoft, just this last year, we moved into an open workspace. We had been traditionalist, living in these private office that nobody else, you know, in the industry tends to use anymore, and we'd been isolated a little bit. But we moved into an open workspace this last summer, and it was an enlightening experience for us as a team. We learned new ways of working. We learned that when I want to have a call, if I have a stereo headset on, it's great for blocking me off, but I may not be experiencing the benefits of collaboration that is promised by that open workspace. So we find that depending on the type of team that I'm in, if I'm in a team where I'm collaborating with my neighbors, people have actually been opting for a monaural headset so that they can be engaged, so they can hear those things, so they can mentor their neighbor because they might be on a call, have a headset on, and they hear a snippet of information. That's enough for them to say, oh, wait, you know, here's something for you to think about, and it enhances the collaboration and mentorship. On the other hand, we actually have some teams that are working almost exclusively. The people they collaborate with are remote. They're not in that same room, so that neighbor that's right next to me in that team might actually not be someone I collaborate with. And so there I want a device that helps me find sanctuary from the noise as other people are talking. And I want a binaural headset that might be able to really isolate that sound. The other factor that we see, as was mentioned earlier, is the Hiven and the Haven and the Hive spaces are ones that work together. So if you have this open workspace environment, you really want to have that private place that you can go to find that private call, the sanctuary of a private call. And for that, you're going to want devices that allow you to seamlessly continue the flow of your discussion without having to hang up and reconnect. Wireless headsets or laptops with Wi-Fi allow you to quickly go from your desk in that open space to the private space in the Haven. And of course, everyone wants to look good on video. And when you're in any space, you're going to have different considerations of what the background is, where you want to frame it. So we're finding a lot of people want the option to have also a tethered webcam in addition to possibly the webcam that might be built into their PC. Even if the PC has great video, they might also want that option so they don't have the up-to-your-nose look, but then can point it at whatever the best background and framing they need. And I'd like to show a quick video here to highlight one example of device innovation that can help you move from the Haven and Hive to another type of workspace that we'll talk about next. This is a plugin that Plantronics, one of our device partners, built based on the Link APIs. It was actually mentioned briefly at the keynote this morning. I'm just going to show you the video.
Great. Yes, I agree. I like that. Great idea. Let me go print that out, and I'll include it with the package I'm delivering to Susan today. But let's discuss it with the team. Uh-huh. Great. Hold on a second, guys. You know, I just got an alert. I've got to take my daughter to the doctor. Let me take this call mobile. Let's keep the conversation going. Yes, I like that idea. Let's go with that. Yes, I agree. That was easy. All right, guys. Let's talk about it in private tonight. Now we're going to win that award.
So what I like about this video is we're seeing more and more devices enter our workspace. And we're finding these devices could be a bunch of isolated islands that are one more thing for me to manage. But that's not how people want to work. They want it to be seamless. They want it to be smooth and transparent. They want it not to be technology forward. They want it to be communication forward to help them do what they need to do to communicate when and where they want. And this technology that Plantronics is demoing, it uses an API that basically, when the headset is paired with my PC and with my cell phone, it can know when I'm walking out of range of the wireless radio of my PC, and it automatically, rather than me worrying about that call dropping, it automatically tells Link Server to call my phone. And so I just can continue that conversation seamlessly without having a drop in communication. And an example of where this might be helpful is as I'm moving from this open workspace, the Hive environment, to another space that we talk about, which is often called the Cove.
So fundamental to being able to treat the entire workplace as your office is this notion of conversation portability, that I can get up, take the information and people that I'm working with, and go to a more appropriate space without having to tear down and rebuild the conversation, as we were talking about a little bit earlier. So some user questions here to think about. You know, what if I could just take that impromptu conversation? Say you and I are sitting at our desk and we're talking about something. We call someone in and we realize we really want to whiteboard some ideas. We really want to tape some stuff up on the walls. We want to continue to work together. What if I could take that conversation easily and just move to a better space to do that in without saying, let me call you back as soon as we find a spot. Hold on a second. Well, let me prop up my camera so you can see the video. No, just walk to the space and collaborate, fulfill that natural urge to share, to gesture, to ideate together. What if I could do all this without breaking our flow? What if I could just stay in the moment, not even think about the devices, like the video showed, just stand up and walk away? And what if once I got there, the devices in my pocket were part of that equation? What if this society of devices around me played together and spoke together, so that I could take advantage of the technology that I have when I'm in that space?
And today we have some options to help you take advantage of this space. When you think about the type of work that you're going to do in this space, it's collaborative, it's ad hoc, it's changing. And we need, for example, the video needs to be able to point where I want it to point. If I'm showing someone something on the whiteboard, or if I put a post-it note on the wall, we have a project outline that I want to point at, I need to be able to point the camera at that so that the remote participants get the view of what I'm trying to direct their attention to. And for that, we've got some great cameras, such as the Logitech BCC950, which actually has built-in pan-tilt zoom. And what's really cool about this is they've actually built a plugin to Link that allows you to control the pan-tilt zoom from the Link client. So it actually has little UI elements within the video window that can, you know, move the camera up or down or zoom in. And that allows you to really take advantage of a space like this. We also want to be able to capture and share ideas. And this is where I'd like to talk about PPI screens. I'm not sure how much of you guys in the room know about PPI screens, but PPI is a great solution that allows you to have rich, interactive touchscreen environment and still run any of your native Windows applications that you might want to run with your familiar Office productivity suite. You can capture and share the information that you want to collaborate on. Another factor of a space like this is, as I mentioned, it's ad hoc. There's a lot of transitions on what I'm trying to do. And so at one moment, it might be a group conversation. It might be a we time where we need to collaborate with someone who's remote using a speakerphone, a loudspeaker device. And maybe I also need to quickly jump onto a call because I have another colleague that's asking me another question. So you're going to want to have the ability to fluidly transition between a we communication style and a me communication style with a wireless headset.
So as we talk about that Cove space, one of the defining characteristics is really that it happens and it's over. Some of the artifacts and things may come with me. I might go back to my desk and work on, say, adding things to a SharePoint or building a deck or so. But it's really temporal. What about group collaborations that take place over a much longer period of time? As we see this shift to group work, we see people coagulating in areas of the building, kind of building up temporary spaces that are meant to house information for mutual awareness, for status update, for being able to just build a shared point of view visually and spatially around them. Well, the what if questions we're thinking about here are kind of driven by what happens if there's a remote team involved. So today we can all tack things up on the board, but what do we do to get those people in the remote location in the same view that we have? What do we do if they're tacking things up on their end? They're a project team in and of their own. So what if we could actually build spaces that supported group collaboration between groups across great distances over a period of time? What if these teams could track their thinking together and maintain awareness while still sitting in a co-located space, making communications, doing the things they need to do to advance their project?
And the space that matches this type of workflow is one that we call the workshop. This is a persistent work area where we're going to do collaboration and ad hoc, but the information is going to want to persist. It's going to be built, and the team is going to stay there for the duration of a project. And for this kind of space, we've really got two great options that we would encourage you to consider for today. First of all, if you're looking to collaborate on information, a PPI screen is a great option for you because it allows you to use your existing productivity apps that your team's already familiar with, and you can store and save that content. And for collaborating and engaging with people remotely in the meeting context, we encourage you to look at the Link Room system because it gives you the ability to join a meeting instantly, always on. It's an appliance that you can trust to work reliably and connect with a familiar Link user interface.
Tremendous problem of digitally distributed work is something that actually not a lot of people acknowledge as a productivity tool today, and that's chance encounters with information. So what if I was able to bump into information from remote teams and individuals by just walking the halls of my building? What if I could kind of get status updates from people that spurred communications and actions in the same way that standing around the water cooler used to, or standing next to a conversation and overhearing something relevant to you in the lunch line did? What if these spaces could actually assist our connections to one another rather than just dumping information there? What if they helped us decide what was relevant to us, what was relevant to the organization, so that we could take action on it immediately by understanding people in the space, by understanding people in their projects, and then acting on it quickly?
And in these spaces today, we have a variety of options that you'll want to consider. users in this space, they're coming into an environment that they may not be familiar with. They're guests to the building, and they need to easily be able to reach out to the person that they came there to visit. For this, you're going to want to consider something like a common area phone, an IP phone that's always on and doesn't require the user to log on to. They can just connect to that and dial their contacts. You're also going to want to make this a place of information sharing and engagement so that the team, the local team, as they walk through that space, they can find relevant information about the team, and they can share that information with other team members. Maybe you can even make it collaborative so that the team can collect information from people that are visiting the plaza. And we encourage you to think about the PPI as an option there, because it does give you that rich interaction, the large screen display, and the ability to run applications to both share and collect information.
Sort of last but not least, a space that I'm sure everyone's quite familiar with. What about meeting rooms? So we talked a little bit about the configuration of these rooms today, that in a lot of cases they're built on some historical assumptions about what's going to happen in that type of space, and that people try to use them for different activities to varying degrees of success. What if we could actually build a little more flexibility into these spaces? What if they were smart and knew what we were trying to do at the time, shifting content, shifting layout a little bit, allowing us to configure them so that we could do the things that we want to do, rather than forcing us to build our activities around the furnishings and the technology in the space? How about if remote participants could actually have an equal seat at the table rather than being an afterthought or a third party kind of drug in at the end? I think we often get into the case where a remote participant's actually the person driving the meeting, and it's awkward to have to invite the presenter into the room. What if they could just be there and have their material ready to go and welcome me to the room as a participant? What if we just didn't notice the meeting space because it worked, and we sat down and got to business?
And today we have a variety of options that will help you outfit your meeting room to make it more productive, to make it something that you can join the meeting instantly when you get to that room without having to fumble for. I think we did some research before we built out Link Room System that at some companies, the average time to get a meeting started was 8 or 9 minutes. In some cases, it's more than that. Who wants to waste that much time of the entire team trying to get a meeting started? Link Room System is an appliance that's always on. It's bookable, so you don't have to worry about somebody else having it reserved because you've scheduled it as part of your Outlook schedule. And you walk into the room, it's always on. We offer the Link Room System in two options, one for a smaller meeting room and one for a larger meeting room, so that you can have the right size for the meeting room. The larger meeting room Link Room System option has two displays, so that you can display content on one screen in a very large display, and you can display the video in the other screen so that you can see the remote participants, and they really do have a seat at the table. In the smaller room, it fits in a nice, more compact environment, allowing you to have a more huddle room type environment. In addition to the Link Room System, we also have a few other options for meeting rooms, ones that you might want to either interop with existing video teleconferencing technology. We work with third-party video solutions such as the Polycom. And in the smaller meeting room space, there's a recently qualified product that I'm excited to talk about, which is the ConferenceCam C3000E from Logitech, which is a combination of a pan-tilt zoom, a high-quality pan-tilt zoom, and a group speakerphone. What's great about this is it's plug-and-play with USB. Again, no worry about configurations. I just walk into the meeting room, set down my laptop, and I plug it in, and I'm off to the races. The meeting just works. That's the key for meeting rooms. We don't want to be wasting time that we can be spending productively. Now, before we wrap up, I'd like to invite you to see a production that we've got in the exhibit hall. And here's a quick video to talk you through what we've got on display there.
Yeah, if you take a look at this space, this is one example of how to plan a space differently with these ideas in mind. So look at how a simple table can be changed to not have a head of the table, but to put everybody at an equal posture to one another. Notice how the counter height eases transitions between the screens and the table, so it's not awkward. If we take a look for a second as we dive through the wall at the remote view, the remote participants have the exact same place at the table as the folks that are in the room. And it's just one example of what we're trying to talk about, which is taking the experience of how the technology is used, taking a look at how a space is designed, and trying to create an overall way of thinking that makes it natural for people that want to interact with each other in the room, makes it natural to interact with people that may be outside of the room, and ultimately just creates an experience that people say, I like it. I like working there. It supports what I'm trying to do. That happens to be in the expo hall, and both myself and my colleague Nick are happy to meet you there and chat with you, not just about this space, but really about that intersection of space and digital and how to create a better user experience.
And in summary, I'd like to tie this back to the question that I mentioned earlier. People always asking me, what's the best device? I'd like to remind you of this framework that we've outlined, this combination of spaces and work modes, and let you think about, as you're deploying new spaces and you're deploying devices, to think about what is it that you're trying to achieve with your employees? What kind of collaboration are you trying to optimize for? What kind of productivity are you trying to increase? And what space are the devices and the people going to be working in? And we show this combination of devices that can help you in all of those combinations. Now I'd like to open it up to questions.
Well, then I will ask you a question. By a show of hands, how many of you get involved in some form or fashion with colleagues in real estate or facilities? Good. We have been observing at Herman Miller, and I don't necessarily think this is true of all of your organizations, that in part because of the move from of audiovisual professionals from largely being based in facilities into IT, there seems to be a growing disconnect. In fact, we just surveyed about 300 facility managers around the world and said, how closely do you work with your IT counterparts? By far, the most close collaborations that they reported were in places like India, China, South Africa, and Brazil. In places like states in the UK, we sensed a growing disconnect, no pun intended. And part of this idea is that if we've, during the information age, been able to work with this assumption that, well, people do all of their work in one place, you give them a standard set of tools regardless of the work, we've grown into some patterns that may need to be rethought given these new ways of working. As you reflect upon your experiences with your colleagues, any specific questions or experiences come to mind that you'd like to share or ask questions about?
I'm curious if there have been specific challenges in terms of deployment. So adding devices to a space in terms of cost, in terms of the spaces you're trying to fit them in not being wired, getting network access into those locations. Are there specific detailed challenges you've faced in rolling out new devices or rolling out a Link deployment? Yeah.
Yeah, we see that too. And as we see more large format interactive displays, products like PPI being used, that that challenge, whether it's a cord draped from a display over to the table or whether it's a floor track, can be a real hindrance because nobody wants to trip or have to step over something. So managing that in a really smart way, whether it's technologically or just doing it in the building infrastructure, is really important. And I think people are getting less and less patient with having cables strung all over their rooms, right?
Yeah.
So that's one place where Link Room System provides a great option, because what you can do for that scenario is you've joined the Link Room System meeting, and you just do application sharing from your tablet. So Link is actually taking care of the sharing. You're not having to connect cables to your PC. You're just joining into the meeting and then doing application sharing.
So what you're saying there is, as long as technically they have an internet connection.
Correct, yes. It could be through the web app or through your built-in Link client. You could also, with Link Room System, you could upload the PowerPoint. If, for example, if you're sharing a PowerPoint, you could upload that to the meeting ahead of time, so that content's already there, and you don't even need the PC to drive it.
If you're doing a desktop share, wouldn't, by joining the meeting, say, physical room from a laptop or a tablet, produce audio issues, basically?
That's one of the benefits of Link Room System. It automatically asks you if you're in the room so that it can mute the microphone of local participants and prevent that echo and feedback.
That's a good question.
That is a great question, because that is a common pain point for a lot of people in traditional meeting rooms.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why we were really excited by Link Room System when we first saw it was we've been hoping for a while that the network can begin to take the place of some of what we see in terms of local AV connections. As we've gone through our own customers' facilities, and I'm sure this is true for everybody, there's dongles everywhere. Nobody knows what cable attachment to use because nobody knows what device is going to be brought in the room. So for us, seeing wireless connectivity like this is exciting. We'd love to not have to deal with the burden of that mass of cables. It's not going away anytime soon, I don't think. We have solutions to do it, but I'm with you. Yeah, it's a huge hassle for the users, it's a huge hassle for facilities, AV, everyone involved.
Funny story, I show up at the convention here, and I've got a Helix, and no traditional RJ45 adapter, and that's all that's in the room, no wireless. So here I got to go find an adapter, or go down to the bar.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. There's an incentive.
Yeah, there may be some logic behind that. question back here.
No, it was more of a comment towards what he did. Is we're actually, the company I work for, in the process of probably rolling out Link Room. We're actually starting Link Rollout in 2 weeks. Link Room probably at the end of March. And what we've done in the past is we've tried to go in the forefront of when they do remodels everywhere, so we've actually made them cut out concrete. It's like, okay, you're paying X amount of dollars. You have that issue and you start, mics start screeching at each other, and there I get my texts and my phone calls and I'm running down the hall going, watch, mute button, guys, here you go. It's just like last week, but I mean, that's kind of how we started doing it is we for the rooms that don't have, the tabletop connections, is we kind of tried to push them towards using the PC in there, and and that way it's usually in the wall. You can kind of get away with running cables through the ceiling and down the walls, and it makes it a little bit easier.
So do any of you guys have a large Link deployment to a new workspace that you're considering, where you're possibly considering new devices being deployed as part of that? Mm. What kind of workspace are you deploying to?
It's the old traditional
cubicles?
Guys are in the field. They have a tough quote.
When your folks from the field come into the office, I don't know if they do that often, but when they do, where are they working when they get there?
We actually have two, actually three facilities, two in Louisiana and one in Texas, that they come into, and they have an office where all our equipment is, and they're able to get on the network at that time if they need to, stuff like that. But for the most part, I mean, these guys are pretty much on the road and remote.
They're out.
More of an open area, that area. It's more of a collaboration type area. We have tables like wrapped around rooms. We have a little cubes for you know, when they want to make phone calls. Displays here and there for them to be able to look at photos and, you know, do, I guess, kind of like pre-project type stuff. It's like, hey, this is the area you're going in. This is the terrain type of stuff. So it's pretty dynamic. It's probably, and I think it was by accident, that it actually happened that way. It was due to, if you throw up some folding tables, because they're never here anyway. Huh. And it actually works very well. And it's pretty cool.
It's cool. Kind of timely for us, because we're moving all our lease facilities back to purchase a large facility. And pulling all our leases back in for the office space. And so it's timely, because we're actually having conversations with the designers about the space, how to retrofit some of the space. As well as we'll bring up a couple of new facilities, so we'll have the opportunity to apply this in both worlds. Because there was a bit of a move to go from the cubes to this open office concept, and some of us have been pushing back because of, you know, when you talk about needing to concentrate and to have a private conversation and not disturb your neighbor because you're on the phone all the time, that doesn't work in an open environment.
Yeah.
Actually, our development team is in an open environment. It kind of depends what kind of work you're trying to do. We intentionally moved to an open work environment as part of the Link and Skype division, because we wanted our development team to be collaborative and engaged. And yes, they do need some private time, and so we need to have the option for them to go find a private space if they're doing some, you know, really heads down work.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that is the mental shift, that if you can help plant that seed in everyone's mind, that no, don't think of whatever you give someone as the place where they do all their work. View it as one. It's kind of like, if I can use this analogy, it's the difference between planning a hotel and a home. So like when you plan a hotel, everybody gets their own space, and when you're there, you're pretty much in your space. In a home, when you go look for a home, you're evaluating the range of spaces, the den, the backyard, the bedrooms, the kitchen, and you're asking yourself, can this, you know, range of spaces support our growth as a family? That's the exact same kind of mentality that's great to put to work in creating a new office space, is to say, we've got all these new tools. It's an era of unified communications. We know people are going to go to where they want to go. Are we giving them the right choices of spaces, not are we giving them the right space? If you can just get past that, then the whole conversation will change about tool deployment as well as how the spaces are planned. You got to communicate that to the employees, though, because if they just see, oh, my gosh, I went from X number of square feet to this, then it's not a win. You just took something away from them, right? Yeah.
And that combination of spaces helps in multiple ways. Number one is you need that private space to do some of your private work. But you also, if you have a cove, you can take some of that noisier, louder, more distractive work and put it into an environment that's not going to distract the people in the open workspace. So we have that actually. One of the teams that works in my neighborhood, we talk in our open workspace, we call them neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. One of the teams that works in my neighborhood, they do a lot of group coding. So the developers will go find a cove, and two or three people will go in there, and they'll sit there and they'll do their code review and their group work. And then they'll split up and they go back to their desks, and they'll work quietly from their desks so that they're not distracting each other, but they also get the benefits of collaboration.
Where their office is, they're all
Right.
You know, because they're all, you know, working on two or three different things or on certain projects, and it's easy, and people are, I think people are catching on to doing it, even if the facility that you're in doesn't actually fit, you know, and a lot of places, I mean, it's expensive, you know, or it's leased and you can't do it. It's people are actually doing it by accident, and it's because of, you always have a telephone, you know, you're always, you know, you're chatting with each other here through text message because you're on the phone with other people. I think it's naturally just happening, and I think it's who we are.
So those are, sorry, those are beautiful situations. When we have, like, researchers, and I actually work within research, we have researchers come upon people doing things accidentally, or somebody's hacked something together, asking the question, well, we gave them some new tools, they've modified the conference room, or they've taken the light bulbs out of the room, or they're, I mean, we see it all the time. That is the perfect time to get everybody together and go, so what are they trying to do? They're trying to do something. And can we design for that? If so, you may drastically boost the productivity of that team. Instead of just kind of complicitly saying, yeah, we're fine that you hacked this together. Yeah, you embrace it.
And it's cool. And our CEO, he's all about it. So, like, actually, right now I'm contacting people. Next week people are coming in and looking at all of our conference rooms, all of our meeting spaces, and kind of redoing them. But like you said, it happens on its own. All we did was put a TV in the room with a computer. That's it.
It ties into your slide at the beginning of our presentation about workers are shoppers.
Yep.
You know, they're gonna go find the environment that meets their needs. Whether you built it for that purpose or not, they're gonna go find it. And part of what we're hoping is the takeaway from this is start thinking about that before you build out a new space, because spaces and devices are expensive. We don't want to have people go build out a space and then go, oops, I wish I would have thought about X.
Yeah, I think the net out, both technologically and spatially, is don't think one size fits all. It's about providing choice. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Other questions? Other thoughts?
Maybe a question for you, Ryan. I think in the tech world, we're kind of native to this nomadic lifestyle, but how is the industry, the traditional space planning industry, moving? Are we way ahead of them? And so it's going to be 5 years of having to put up with, you know, even a new building might be under construction, but it's sort of the same sort of cutter approach. Where is the industry moving?
Great question. So I think the industry is moving, and it's a good thing, and it's probably being prompted by what I sometimes call empty workstation syndrome. By the way, there's a bunch of terms in the facilities world that mean the same, that mean something different than in the IT world. So when I say workstation, I mean cubicle. I don't mean desktop computer. So more and more companies are going to go, geez, where is everybody? And they're realizing that, well, we gave people the autonomy to go work other places. They're leveraging that. And so by sheer necessity, even the folks in real estate are beginning to go, there's got to be a better way to do this. So they're feeling the need. I think the industry that is geared around planning space, thinking about space, is quickly trying to adapt. The tech world's interesting because other than maybe oil and gas, there's probably no industry that I see that's pouring more money and resources into creating spaces. You know, the new Skype headquarters is a really, really good example. I think it's awesome that the companies that are probably best enabling people to work anywhere also value the importance of being together, coming together in an important space, the role of acculturation, and having people feel part of the organization. But I would say, short answer, it's in a state of transition. And we're seeing bold attempts at doing some things, but sometimes the user's just not at the center of it. So it's great that you want to create a really open, crazy place, but does it, in fact, help somebody do their work? Not always sure. Likewise, in the tech world, we see a lot of things that are very slick, but users don't want to adopt them. And so for me, I think the more that these solutions, both spatial and technological, really take the user's needs in mind, they're very empathetic, they work, the more we'll see some fuel. But for right now, I would say that, yes, the tech world is a step ahead of other industries, and that the folks that are planning spaces are learning, as everybody else is, what really works and what doesn't. I'm proud to be part of an organization that feels also well ahead of the curve, and part of our goal is to live it you know, before our customers will. Well, it's a great thing to tell the story. And, you know, I'm also a really, really big fan of pilot programs. So I know this is common practice in the IT world. It's also common practice in the facilities world. Ironically, sometimes it's not done together. So, hey, take 20 people. Yes, deploy new tools for them. Yes, plan a new space for them. Do it together. take advantage of, you know, the fact that they're more autonomous or they have more ability to connect with each other through Link. And so I think, yeah, telling the stories, but also really actively encouraging people to pilot some of this stuff so that their own users can say, yeah, this works. And of course, you know, having some early adopters is always a good thing.
Yeah, a personal illustration on that. With the Skype buildings in Redmond, when we initially moved in, there was a lot of resistance because of the culture of single offices. So it was kind of half change management and half moving to a new building. Once we got there, and I'm speaking only for our design neighborhood, our occupancy rate on average is probably about 40% at desk, which is interesting because those people were fighting tooth and nail for their desk. And where we realized people were going is into the rest of the building, just kind of like we're talking about today. They're using the space differently. We have two buildings, so they're going between buildings, doing projects, finding new spaces, finding places to work. So had we proposed what I'm going to tell you about next at the beginning of this project, it would have been explosive, which was, hey, people aren't at their desks. We've got people coming and going. Maybe we should try hot desking in this space. Let the desk go. So we're taking exactly that approach to pilot that, get a group of people who are interested in kind of being the cowboys with space, let them try it, see how it works for them. And if it doesn't work, we'll kind of roll back because we do want to listen to what they're saying they need to do in the space. But boy, if we had started there and just tried to enforce some policy of no one gets a desk and it's a free-for-all, I probably wouldn't live to be here on stage today.
All of us, whether we work in IT or facilities, are in the change management business in one form or fashion, so we need to think of it in that way. Mr. Mon. That's a great point.
One thing I always remind is that I love the open because I'm an extrovert.
This is Nick, by the way.
Yeah, our developers are like, they love it when it's just thinking. Mm. You know, but they love going back to their office and whatever they're working on and not looking at each other.
Well, that's fair. Well, but it may be that their work mode requires it. So, I mean, you know, I often joke that nobody needs really distracted accountants. Or I was just with a research firm, biomedical research, and they're doing Parkinson's research. I don't think they need to be distracted. So it's not that, you know, private offices are bad. It's just really getting down to, boy, what do they really need to do to be productive? Let's make sure they've got access.
And it's the variety. I think variety is the key.
Variety is the key. Right. Oh, and we're finding that more and more. So even I mentioned accounting. Even as we study accountants, accountants are doing a much broader range of activities throughout the course of a day than maybe they were 20 years ago.
3 minutes late.
Great point. Other questions, thoughts? All right. Well, please feel free to ask any of us or come visit us out in the Expo Center. And thanks for being here.
Yes. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.